Okay, so what we're going to talk about today, maybe it'll be one day, maybe two, I don't know. I doubt it. We'll see, except we started a bit late. is the question of the building of the third Beit HaMikdash, which came up as an aside in the question of Chadash, where the Takana, if you remember, the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, was that you should, even though he holds it fundamentally, Heir Pnei HaMizrach permits the grain, unless there's an Omer, but when there's an Omer, you can, under normal circumstances, assume the Omer will be brought by Chatzot. So the Gemara says, so why did Yochanan Zakkai make a Takana that Yom Hanef Kulo Asur, that the entire day would be prohibited? Because Shema Yibana Beit HaMikdash, because maybe the next year the Beit HaMikdash will be built and people will forget that when there is an Omer you're supposed to wait until the bringing of the Karban. So the Gemara says, why wasn't this Takana only until Chatzot? Because the Karban is always brought by Chatzot. So the Gemara answered that maybe the Beit HaMikdash, the third Beit HaMikdash, will be built last minute at night.
So somehow that's domed to a regular table case. But
right before Yontif. And therefore, they won't have time to actually finish things, and on that year, the Omer will be brought after Chatzot, and that's why I have to be worried. Now, what all the Rishonim were bothered by is, I don't understand. You can't build the Beit HaMikdash at night, so how could it be the Beit HaMikdash will be built at night, such that you will be delayed? And that is where we launched into this machlokes between what we presented as Rashi and the Meiri. But what I want to do, I know Daniel said, oh, this isn't Lumdish. It's, I mean, not per se Lumdish, right? But we're surveying an important issue. But let me frame it for you in a way that maybe is not obvious from the Makara. And that is that the question of how the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be built, whether it's going to fall ready made out of heaven or not, is actually part of a much broader machlokas Rishonim, which is itself seemingly a machlokas in the Gemara, though the Rishonim obviously debate how to understand the Gemara, which is, fundamentally speaking, do we think that the Messianic period is going to be miraculous in nature, or do we think that the Messianic period is going to be fundamentally non-miraculous in nature? So, Daniel, I know this is not on the sheet, but since you're doing Daf Yomi,
it was in Shabbos. It was Shmuel said, I think. Right?
Very good. So, yeah. As Daniel correctly says, that this is presented as a machlokes between who and who?
Shmuel and like other rabbi.
Right. So the Gemara presents.
I only remember Shmuel. He was the one that made sense.
Good. Well, what does Shmuel say? So what does Shmuel say?
The pasuk that says that the sheep and the lions will live together should not be taken literally, or rather that there won't be any supernatural change, and that other nations will still be fighting. And it was about swords and weapons, they'll be used for. And he says, yeah, well, the Jews maybe per se will not be fighting, but the rest of the world order will still continue, and other nations will fight other nations.
Right. So the Gemara, it comes up in sort of a funny place. The sugya that you're talking about in Shabbos, this appears elsewhere, but let's focus on the one in Shabbos. That the Mishnah was talking about the question of whether carrying weapons on Shabbat is considered carrying, and therefore an Isur D'oraita, or it's a tachshit, considered it, right. And the Mishnah quotes the machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say, well, weapons are genai, they're degrading, they're not really, even if necessary, we don't view them as bigadim, as a tachshitim. And Eliezer says, well, as long as they're still necessary, right, in the world that is necessary, they are tachshitim, and therefore it's like just like you're allowed to wear your clothes, and that's not called carrying, so you can wear your weapon. We paskin that it's usher. That is usher. We paskin is usher, correct.
Well, like a sword bell with a sword attached to it.
Is usher. What about, correct. It's carrying.
Like what about a gun for self-defense?
So then that's a different head there. Right? The Gokhanevich is a different head there than carrying.
Right, but the question is have to be like very clear Pekohnevich or potential Pekohnevich?
So that's the discussion that modern posts can have. Right?
All about
fundamentally, we paskin What? Ah, so if there's an Eruv, so then you don't have the carrying problem. I mean, if you hold of the Eruv, let's assume you hold of an Eruv. But if you hold of the Eruv, so then you don't have the carrying problem. You have Mukta problems, but there the Pekuach Nefesh obviously going to say, well, this is not Mukta, and it's a much lower bar.
Yeah, I don't understand Mukta.
No, meaning the...
I mean, once you can say you can carry from Pekuach Nefesh, I don't
think... No. If it was Mamish Pekuach Nefesh, you could carry Nishas Harabim. But if this is not really Pekuach Nefesh, it's like, I do it because that might, you know, something which might not halachically qualify as Pekuach Nefesh, but like, it's there for a reason, right? For Mukta purposes, it's enough to say that it has a purpose.
Yeah.
Right? It's much more problematic to carry in Rosh Hashanah, right? In Rosh Hashanah, we paskin that it is carrying. And therefore, the only way to be matzah is to say it's Pekuach Nefesh, but then you'd have to figure out, is it mutter for me to be in this place? Right? Why am I walking this place in the first place? Right? Good. So in that context, the Gemara says as follows. That the Chachamim say to Rabbi Elazar, Tanya Amar le Rabbi Elazar, this is Gemara Shabbos Samech Gimel, V'chameyachad tachshitin hein lo mivnei mahein b'teilin limod ha-mashiach. So the Gemara says that the Chachamim say to Rabbi Elazar, if they are really, you know, if you consider weapons as clothing, as adornments, then why won't we have them in time of Mashiach? Right? Wear it for glory. So what does he answer?
They'll be made into...
So Amar Lam Lefi Shein Etzricha, and he says you don't need them. Shenem Mar Lo Yisa Goya Goy Cherev. So the Gemara says, Tevi Linoi Balma, why don't you just say, well, it's just for looks? And what does the Gemara answer? Amar Abaye, Midi Da Havei Ashraga B'Tiara. In a world where there's no fighting, having a weapon would be like having a candle outside. It's pointless.
In the daytime.
So, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the fundamental nature of the political world will collapse in the time of Mashiach. And the Gemara says that Upliga di Shmuel, that argues on Shmuel. Damar Shmuel ain bein olam hazeh l'man Mashiach elo shiabud galiot bilvad. The only difference is between now and Mashiach is, will we be oppressed by the foreign nations? There are no miracles, right? There are no open miracles. Nature isn't changing. Nature will remain fundamentally the same in the time of Mashiach. That's the position of Shmuel. So if you read this Gemara, Pshuto Kimashma'o, so you have a machloket. Rabbi Eliezer thinks that there will be a fundamental change to the natural order, though all he outlines here is that there won't be fighting, but, right? So that's some sort of suspension of the natural order in terms of animosity and things like that, of human nature. And Shmuel says that even that is not true. People will have animosity. It's just that we won't be oppressed by the nations. That is what time of Mashiach will be, but fundamentally it will be a natural world. Now, if you just stop there, you would say that that's true. But if you look, there's a short comment of Tosfot there that says as follows. Ain bein olam hazeh l'man Mashiach. Avakav dehashtein Yerushalayim ain bein hamikdash. V'ilaman Mashiach yakol banui. Tzorch lomer ain bein lav dafka. He says, what do you mean? There are other differences. We're going to have a bein hamikdash. And therefore he says, don't take Shmuel so literally. Lav dafka.
Well,
lav dafka.
That's very kind of a weird thing to
100%.
Say.
100%. So Daniel says, what are you talking about? He means, obviously, there won't be Shibud Malchut, and therefore we'll return to a sovereign state, and we'll build a bit of Mikdash, and all the stuff that comes with that, that's all Shmuel means. It means that nature will stay the same.
Yeah.
But what do you see?
The Mikdash is not that
far. Very good. So what motivates Tosos to say what he says?
Because it's going to fall out of the sky.
So I don't know if in this Tosos is thinking that, but what I think does motivate Tosos is that Tosos doesn't believe fundamentally that anyone holds that the world will be
the exact same
in the time of Mashiach. And that is the background to the issue that we're going to see. And I know that it doesn't seem like... This is not Lumdus, right? This is Machshava, but it's not... But there is... Again, you wanted to do this topic. No, we're going to do a survey of the topic. But I'm going to push it a little bit more than might be obvious from these Mikaros. Like I said, the basic Mikaro, I went online to try to find one of the sources and found that someone had already made a Mikaro sheet with the ones I wanted to copy and paste. So I just, printed it off because I was looking for some of the harder to find ones, which are not most of them. They're towards the end. But let us look at this. Okay? So, The position that is going to fall out of Shamayim, which is obviously a very extreme, nature is going to change, which we already saw in Rashi. So the first person who suggests it is the Midrash Tanchuma. It's actually in the Midrash, and that's the source, the first source you have here. Yes. The Midrash, yes. So the Midrash Tanchuma, I'll tell you the year. One second.
Oh, is that the first one?
The first source, yeah.
Is that the first Midrash?
No. But let me get the exact year. You're right, it's not.
Rabbi Rosner had a book on Midrashim, and at the end of it, it was like a timeline of every Midrash when it was written for how long.
Which the Tanchuma is. What century is it? So some academics think it's. The manuscripts were compiled in the 8th, 9th century. You're still talking a few hundred years before Rashi. Okay?
How long before?
A few hundred. Okay? Fine. So in the Tanchuma, you get the following. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olam Hazeh Asitem Mishkan U'Mikdash Shehayu B'choma L'atid Ani Evne Beit HaMikdash V'tiye Mukafot B'choma Eish Sh'ne'emar God says, the Mishkan you built, the Beit HaMikdash, I will build. The Yalkut, which is very late, the Yalkutim are very late, has a very fascinating take on this, and he says, why will God build it in fire? Right? Remember that Masor that we saw in Rashi. To pay back the loan, because God allowed it to be burnt the first time, so now he has to repay the Beit HaMikdash, so he repays it in fire. This is the theological framing of the Yalkut. And that's what you get here in the Yalkut Shimoni, that Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Hitziti Eish B'Tzion, I was responsible for the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed. I burned it down. Shneimar V'Yitzi Eish B'Tzion. V'Ani Atid Livnot Ha'Eish. And therefore, I will eventually repay my debt and rebuild an fire. Shneimar V'Ani Yelon.
He literally means like a wall of fire?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know if it'll then solidify into stone.
Wait, but is he saying we're going to build a base?
No, no, no.
That's going to surround it with the wall.
No, no. It sounds like God will build it,
and then a wall of fire. Right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like it'll descend in fire and then solidify into stone. I don't really know. Right. Yes, and as we know, this tradition becomes quite popular in Ashkenaz. So Rashi, as we already saw, used this to explain the Takana of Reuchem and Zakkai, that Mikdash Ha'atid Sha'anu Mitzupin. It's up in Banuim Shuchlal, who Yigler Yavo Min Shamayim. Yes, I'm sure. Shemar Mikdash Hashem Kodesh Yodecho, and he is pasuk is from the and his, but Rashi's source is not the same as the Midrash. He quotes in a different source where the pasuk in Shemot says that the Mikdash, which Hashem established, but the Mishkan that was never established by Hashem, we built it. So from here Rashi derives. Oh, it must be that God will build it. Same as, and Tosfot in Soka says the exact same thing.
There are other ways to interpret that.
What?
There are other ways to interpret that.
Yes, of course there are. And we'll see them in a minute. And that is, right, so that is correct. And the, you know, I don't want to go into too much, but some of them farshim to say, no, it means the Mikdash you commanded us and showed us how to build, and we built it. You gave us the mitzvot. Right? Tosfot follows
Rashi. Along the lines of, the other one we built, but this one is going to be built with the support of God.
Or whatever.
It won't be destroyed or something.
The Tosfot says the same thing. Ritva says the same thing. Right? They all agree with Rashi.
This is right, but the later.
And Rabbeinu Bechaye pushes it even farther. Well,
it's the later one, not the one that wrote the Koko.
What?
This is the later Rabbeinu Bechaye.
Yeah. And Rabbeinu Bechaye as well. Takes this even farther, and he says, "What are the implications of the fact that it's built mishamayim?" So, Amru b'midrash, bayit rishonu bayit sheni shenasu yedei basar v'dam. The first Beit HaMikdash, which were created by man, they Shlomo v'Koresh. The first Beit HaMikdash was built by Shlomo. The second one was built under the auspices of who's Koresh? The Persian king,
yeah,
Cyrus, right? Koresh, right? I actually have a friend who just had a baby, and they gave his English name Cyrus after Cyrus the Great. Yes, they did. What? I don't think so. He's a scholar of like a biblical scholar from Harvard, and she's the
scholars from some
and she's the grandchild of probably the biggest Bible scholar in the last 50 years. So Nachum Sarna, one of the most prominent. So they had a whole post on Facebook about how they named him. His English name is Cy, after Cyrus, Cyrus the Great, which I thought was interesting. I mean, I name my kids after Molly Jones, but I can't talk. You know, fine. So, but the Rabbi Nochai says, "Aval bayit shlishisha atid liyot binyan binyan shamayim atid liyakayim leolam lekach nekred al shmo." Shalakodesh Baruch Hu Shehu Chai V'Kayam La'olam.
He's saying he'll build it and it'll last.
I agree. No, I agree.
What?
He's saying he's going to build it and it will last.
Yep. Forever. And that's what happens when it's built by God. Now, who disagreed? So, you'll be happy to know that the Yerushalmi disagrees.
It doesn't sound like it's saying straight out.
Well, it does. V'yivnu is they will build. Right? Yerushalmi in Megillah says, is in describing, and this Yerushalmi appears in several places, it also appears in Maaser Sheni. I happened to, you know, because I finished Maaser Sheni like on Sunday or whatever it was, last week, I came across it then. But Kisharu Agaliyot Sheinatun B'Tzafon V'Yavo V'Yivnu B'Nei HaMikdash U'Natan B'Daro. V'Yikaraba as well says that we will be V'Yivne B'Nei HaMikdash. The Rambam is the extreme, because the Rambam is very much the one who believes that remember, as I said before, this is not just a prat. This is, for the Rambam, this is an expression of his whole worldview about Mashiach, which is that it's fundamentally naturalistic. And this is where this is an important point. That the question of whether the Bina Mikdash will fall from heaven is not an isolated question. Right? It's not an isolated question. It is related to your broader perspective on the on Nimoda Mashiach. And the Rambam consistently takes a radical view of Shmuel, that Shmuel literally means there will be no changes in nature, miracles will be limited to none, and therefore they were. And if you look, for example, the Rambam in Perek Yudalev HaMelachim, he just says very simple, Melech HaMashiach Atid Lamor Lach Shem Malchut David Leoshna L'Mitzvah Rishon Avon HaMikdash U'mikabit Nidchei Yisrael. Right, every aspect. There'll be a Melech, he'll build the Beit HaMikdash, he'll bring about Kibbutz Galiot V'chozrin Kol HaMishpatim B'yamav K'sheu Mikodim Makrivin Karbanot V'osin Shmitim Yovel Kol Mitzvah Adam Rabat
Torah. He says there will first be a king of Israel.
Yes. The Rambam is very insistent on order.
Is that to be taken literally also? That there will literally be a king?
Good. So this is where it's not... Well, we can get into a whole shir on Mashiach where it's not clear, first of all, whether this order is definitely... Right? Do we really need Mashiach first? Right? Could it be that Kibbutz Galiot will happen before that? The Rambam doesn't seem to think so.
At this point, it kind of makes more sense to say that Mashiach will create a king.
Very good. So
hard to see a king.
Very good. So the Rambam is very insistent in order, but like Rav Kook, in his eulogy for Herzl, said no, like Kibbutz Galiot will happen through quote unquote Mashiach ben Yosef, which Mashiach ben Yosef for him is a metaphorical stand-in for like the naturalistic political movement, and then that'll eventually reach its spiritual apex under the next era called Mashiach ben David, right? The Rambam is a,
so he would call this Mashiach ben Yosef.
Yes, he thinks that Zionism is is part of the metaphorical Mashiach ben Yosef, which is this initial stage in the Gula. And a lot of the liturgy that was written by religious Zionism is things like saying that the state of Israel is Reshit Smichat Gulateinu, or if you want to be less insistent in some versions, Shet Tehe Reshit Smichat Gulateinu, that it should be. Yes, but that's by Rav Herzog, Reshit, again, that's saying it's the beginning of the flowering, right? Meaning it's not the end, but it's the beginning of the growth of that period. So it happens to be that the Rambam is also in a very, very strict order person when it comes to Mashiach, when many others who are much more naturalist still don't, are not. But this is the Rambam's, and he says, now, I'm putting these sources, but there are certain things that are probably not obvious, okay? So let me read the Rambam, then I'll make a point. Halacha Dalet, the Rambam says, V'imyamod melech min beit David, hogeh betarav osik b'mitzvot ki David aviv, kifi ha-torah shebechtav shebal peh, v'yachuv kol Yisrael leilech b'alachazik b'at. If a king arises and he starts learning Torah and he starts inspiring people to follow the Torah and he fights wars on behalf of the Jewish people, he's Becheskat Mashiach. You can assume he's Mashiach, but he's not Mashiach. You don't know for sure. If he manages to actually finish off the process and build a Beit HaMikdash and bring Kibbutz Goliot, so then he's definitely Mashiach.
So you're saying this person doesn't necessarily have to have some divine right to build this Mikdash?
He doesn't say anything about it. It could be a god
theory that is a king and learns Torah and is a religious Jew.
So presumably God is behind it, but Daniel is asking the right question. Okay, and this is why I said, I know, I was happy to sort of just take the card off, you know, the computer, because there are points that have to be made here that are not obvious in the sources. So let's, and this is why it might take 2 days, because you're looking at these sources, why is it going to take 2 days? So now let me make a very important point from Professor David Berger. Okay, I didn't give you this article inside, because it's in Hebrew.
Is this the Berger that Chabad?
Yep.
Yeah, we had a rabbi in Rambam tell us about him that he was like excommunicated and that they hate him and would kill him if they could. And he's like, really good book, you guys should read it.
So David Berger is amazing. I love him very dearly. Rabbi Dr. David Berger. I really do love him. He's a tzaddik and a massive, massive Talmud Chacham. He's recently the retired dean of the graduate school I went to. He was dean when I was there in Bernard Revel Graduate School in YU's Jewish Studies graduate program. So I took him in graduate school before they joined Brooklyn College, but his retirement job was he became professor in YU and then became dean for a few years. He's had quite a storied career. First let me tell you a story, because might as well have a story. So I remember once, and this was, this does not have to do with this, but it's a great story, and it highlights the type of unique Talmud Chacham that Professor Berger is. So my first year in YU, they had a question-answer session on the first Shabbos of the year. Maybe this was my second year. They had a panel discussion, and it was Dr. Berger. It was Rabbi Dr. David Berger, who normally, even though he's Rabbi Doctor, goes by Doctor, because his primary job in life was he was a professor of Jewish studies. But he is both Rabbi Doctor, okay? And then Rav Rosenzweig, who is also a Rabbi Doctor, but his full-time job is Rabbi. So he normally goes by Rabbi, and this is important for this story, right? And then Hillel David, who was the first vice president of YU at the time. The panel started off with Hillel David saying, I have no idea why I'm here. he's like with these people on the panel, I don't really know what I'm adding. He's a wonderful person. But when it got to Torah, so he sort of, you know, sat and listened. It was very fun. But this was like the moment, one of my favorite moments. So someone raised his hand and he said, okay, I have the following shaila. One of my co-workers is a devout Hindu. So for her birthday, I made a birthday cake. But I didn't realize that their religious strictures weren't just vegetarian, they were vegan. And therefore I'd made them a cake, but I didn't process that it was vegan and I made it with an egg. This is already bavar, it happened already. Should I tell her that I think I told this story last time we did about Zara, so maybe you'll remember it. Should I tell her that I put an egg in it? This was the question. So first, Rosenzweig answered. And Rosenzweig, again, his primary job is rabbi. So Rosenzweig said, well, you know, he went on for a while about, well, I think, you know, it could be a Kiddush Hashem, to be honest. And, you know, he went on about this for a few minutes. You know, I think you should tell her. Ah, very good. Why no?
Because it happened already. It won't change anything.
Ah,
it's just going to make her feel bad.
So that's what
and
you would have said. But Dr. Berger, and this is again where you see the difference between someone who primary job is a rabbi and happens to have a PhD, and someone whose primary job is in academia and is an expert in in comparative religion, because what his focus has been on Jewish-Christian dialogue. That's his area of study. And he said, no, it's usur mid'oraita for you to tell her. Why? Because there's an isur d'oraita in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is v'shem Elohim achirim lo yishama al picha, which Chazal understand to mean as follows: Shem Elohim achirim, the names of other gods, lo yishama al picha, is the passive form. Is you shall, well, passive causative. You shall not make it be heard through your mouth, which Chazal understand to mean that not only can you not invoke idolatry, but you can't be the proximate cause of someone else invoking idolatry. And he said that in Hinduism, if you violate your veganism, you have to do tshuva. And the tshuva process for a Hindu, for a devout Hindu, involves idol worship. And if you tell her, you will be the cause of idolatry, it's actually asur mid'oraita for you to tell her. At which point Rosenzweig backed down and said, you know, I didn't think about that. I'm moda. So Dr. Berger is really quite a unique Talmud Chacham in terms of his grasp of these things. But he makes a fascinating point. And he says, the amazing thing is that the Rambam's extreme rationalism about Mashiach is what enabled all of the major false messianic movements in Judaism. Because he said, here's the logic, and then I'll explain how it played out.
Anyone can do it as long as they...
Very good. He said, what happened? He said, think about it. If you are Rashi, in order to prove that you are Mashiach, you need to have the Beit HaMikdash fall out of heaven. Right? You need to be performing miracles. That means, right, because his point was that often people think that, like, false messianisms are wrapped up in, like, mysticism, and rationalists would never get caught up in this. But he said the irony is that it's not true. Is that if you're Rashi and you're convinced that the messianic era is going to look super miraculous, then if somebody comes along and doesn't start performing open miracles, you look at him and say, that's not Mashiach. But the Rambam tells you that Mashiach is basically an inspirational leader who has some political success, and even before he manages to bring the Jews together or build the Beit HaMikdash, already, what is he? Bechezkat Mashiach. You can assume he's Mashiach until proven otherwise. And once he builds the Beit HaMikdash... So, his first example is... I'll get to that. His first example is, what was the most successful / disastrous false messianic movement within Judaism? Shabbat Tzvi. I mean, well, arguably Christianity, but let's skip beyond Christianity, right? But was Shabbat Tzvi, right? Shabbat Tzvi. You all know Shabbat Tzvi? Yes. So this was a case of a person who basically decided that he was Mashiach, and he had huge followings, and he really, like, wrapped up, like, it became a worldwide phenomenon, but he also wrapped it up with some mystical ideas of antinomianism, which is what made it really bad. Antinomianism is basically anti-religion, anti-law, right? He thought that as part of the Messianic era, the law would change, and therefore, he would tell people to violate the Torah and make a bracha. What bracha? Yes, he took a bracha that we say in the morning and he switched one letter. So in the Birkat HaShachar we say Matir Asurim, right? Which means that he unbinds the imprisoned, right? Those who are Asur, tied up. And he changed that bracha to Matir Isurim, that he permitted things which were forbidden. And he made it for hundreds of years, you should know, right? This became so bad, right, that it only ended when he ended up converting to Islam, when his life was threatened. And then it led to many people, going up the derech entirely, losing hope, and many people continued to follow Shabtai Tzvi for a long, long time, including certain people that you think are Jews, like famous Jews, or in fact famous Sabbateans. The most famous Sabbatean, probably, that you didn't know was a Sabbatean, I only found this out in graduate school, but he came from a Sabbatean family, not a regular Jewish family, was Louis Brandeis, the famed Supreme Court justice, who it was actually from a Sabbatean family. That was what Shneur Lyman told me when I was in graduate school. Who knew? So Dr. Berger's point is that the Rambam's conviction that the Imodah Mashiach are fundamentally natural, and therefore at the beginning you can treat someone Bechezkat Mashiach, you can assume they're Mashiach even without proving it, because if it's all natural, so look, once they start inspiring people and winning wars, so then you can assume they're Mashiach, and then you'll only find out for sure when they manage to build the Beit HaMikdash. That really opens the door for someone to come and say, hey, I'm inspirational, people are following me, I'm Mashiach, and people will say, well, he's at least Bechezkat Mashiach. Now, Daniel is correct that it also became for those who believe that the Rebbe was Mashiach, the Rambam was their source as well. And apparently, I didn't know this, but before the Rebbe died, when people would ask, is the Rebbe Mashiach, what would he say? Or what would people say about him?
He wouldn't answer.
No, what, not him. What would other people say? So apparently, there was a group within Chabad who said, he's not Mashiach, he's this language from the Rambam, Bechezkat Mashiach. He hasn't finished, he hasn't built the Beit HaMikdash yet, so we don't know he's Mashiach, but...
That's so weird that they use this, but they also believe that it will fall out of the sky. It's kind of...
very good. So this is what Dr. Berger points out, is that there's the irony, is that people tend to assume that the Messianist movements are more mystical and the like, but the reason that you can start a Messianist movement and not be immediately disproven is only if you draw on the rationalist traditions of believing that at least the initial stages of Mashiach are not miraculous, and therefore it's pretty easy for someone to say, hey, I'm at least Bechezkat Mashiach.
They take this because this is easier to make your
correct
someone, but
right.
Then when it comes to the actual building, it's like,
right, bid you. Right, so obviously there is some inconsistency, but I thought that was a fascinating point by Dr. Berger, is that you have to realize that Dafka, the Rambam's conviction that Mashiach is so naturalist, is what basically makes it that anybody who's a successful leader could at least plausibly say at the initial stage of their career, I'm Bechezkat Mashiach.
I mean, sure, but you can read it a different way. Not that he is Mashiach until proven otherwise, more that anyone has the potential to be Mashiach.
No, so Cheskat Mashiach is a little bit...
But obviously you need to make the Mikdash show that you are.
Right, so
Cheskat... has the potential, not that they aren't or proven otherwise.
Okay, Cheskat Mashiach depends how strong you want to hold it. Either they're Mashiach and proven otherwise, or at least you can work with that assumption or something like that. But the Rambam, Dafka, because it's so rationalist, right, that's why he has this category of Bechezkat Mashiach, right? We have a working assumption that the guy is Mashiach until we know otherwise. Right, that's a quite radical statement. Now, part of it might just be that the Rambam thinks that, look, building a Beit HaMikdash is a mitzvah, so of course we're going to build it, and that's what you have. The Rambam in number 20 says, Vasuli Mikdash is a mitzvah, the smog, Shalosh mitzvah, Nisavu Yisrael, Bechinisad, and Laretz, Lamed, Lamelech, Lachar, Zer, Chalmolek, Vachshi, Anuch, Magum, Koi, Vem, Misaviv, Livno, Beit HaBechira.
Is that every single time we built it, that was a separate mitzvah, or it's one mitzvah?
It's the mitzvah to build a Beit HaMikdash.
So every time they built, so we have had two so far, right? So every time they built it, they got another mitzvah?
Yeah, just like every time you take a lulav, right? You, it's something you do more than once.
But in theory, the best would be to build and destroy it.
No, because you're not allowed to. Because if it's a door, I said to destroy it. Lo tasim ken lashan lokechem. Right now, the chinuch clarifies obviously that this is a mitzvah. Right, Seaboard. Now, I will note, now I was debating how much to give you. Now, the truth is that even within Rashi, there are stirot. Rashi in Yeshayahu, a thing in Yeshayahu, says, it contradicts this and says that it might be that it's built by
Seraphim.
What?
Angels.
Who cares? No. That who says that the Beit HaMikdash will be built by people? Oh. Rashi. So, okay. Actually, before I go on, there was another point I wanted to make here. So, remember, the Meiri in this follows who?
The Rambam.
The Rambam. So that's what I thought. And Dr. Berger in his article notes that fundamentally you can align the Meiri with the Rambam, and Rashi with not the Rambam. And this is part of their general machloket of whether Yimot HaMashiach is going to be a naturalistic phenomenon or not. However, so I had studied this sugya from an academic perspective when I was in graduate school. With that was the article I sent you with Dr. Tanner Fogel. And if you look in one of his footnotes, he notes that Dr. Berger makes the point that Rashi and Meiri basically align with the Rambam and anti-Rambam camp on this regard. However, he notes that in... but Dov Schwartz has a book on Mashiach, on messianic views in the time of Mashiach, and in chapter 6 of his book, which is entitled Between Naturalism and Apocalyptic Messianism, he notes that this is not actually the case, that Meiri, as much as the Meiri follows the Rambam in this regard, right, meaning he thinks the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built naturally, he notes that if you actually follow the Meiri through, and the Meiri isn't the only one. The Meiri is part of a group of what he calls moderate rationalists in Provence, right? Of people who are mostly rationalists, but they're not quite as extreme as the Rambam. He notes that the Meiri, David ben Shmuel HaKochavi, Abba Mari of Marseille, all of them are mostly rationalists, but none of them are as extreme as Rambam, and they are open to the possibility that there are going to be certain changes. So for example, he quotes this line, and this is from the Perush of the Meiri. I'll read you the English. I have the English translation, so why not? The Meiri's Perush on Tehillim, where the Meiri writes that prayers... I'll read the whole thing. And the homily says that all prayers will be annulled in the future, but thanks offerings will not be annulled. Meaning tefillah will not be necessary in Mona Mashiach. Why? So the Meiri says...
Is that derisa, or is that
so he says the following. Prayers then will not be needed for anything that people might request, because the goods will prevail forever, and all will only wish to thank and praise, nor will there be sinners needing to bring offerings of sin and atonement.
Well, that either sounds like a supernatural, or that the reason we have prayer now is because on our own people don't thank God or whatever, don't know how. But at times of Mashiach, when knowledge of God will be so abundant,
very good, so
people will be able to do it on their own.
Very good. So this is what what Dov Schwartz points out, is that the Meiri is primarily a rationalist, but the Rambam is quite extreme in how naturalistic he thought Mashiach would be, right? He thought that basically everything would be totally the same, except that we wouldn't have Shibud Malchiyot. The Meiri is much more comfortable with saying, yeah, but maybe people will be fundamentally better, so things won't go bad as much, right? Meaning, the Meiri is, and this is Dov Schwartz's point throughout this whole article, I can send it to you. It's 43 pages, just this chapter. But I have the English. You can thank Roy Sklar. He found that on the YU website. You can download the whole chapter for the whole book for free in English. I'll send you the PDF. I'll send it out after Shir. I can send that now. So he notes, and I think again, and this is why I said, like the basic makarot are similar, but I think the academic perspectives here do add a lot, and this is why I said it might take us. It looks like it will take us 2 days. Is that so? Again, what Professor Schwartz notes is that the Meiri. I'll read you his exact quote because I think it is quite telling. Let me just send it out here. Schwartz, Between Naturalism and Between Naturalism and Apocalyptic Messianism. Okay, I sent you the 40-page English chapter. Fine, I can trust you to all read English. Academic Hebrew. You don't have to read it if you don't want to. You have no expectation to read it. I'm just telling you that I'm giving it to you if you want it. But here's his line. I do think it is important. He says, though adopting a Maimonidean philosophical version of immortality, then Meiri saw no problem in coloring redemption with strong apocalyptic hues. His description was sometimes open and explicit, and sometimes subtly elusive, clearly showing the Meiri had indeed absorbed apocalyptic traditions and had tried to incorporate them into his rationalist world. In other words, he did not retreat from the intellectual overtones of redemption, yet characterized it as pervaded by overt miracles, thus agreeing with and contesting Maimonides at the same time. The tension between the messianic model... What? Meaning he's saying he's fundamentally Maimonidean, but you see that the Rambam...
Some aspects of it are...
Correct, that besides for...
Well, it's because the Rambam just doesn't like miracles. Miracles don't have to be super... Like, they're kind of supernatural, but they don't have to be.
Correct, but you see that the Rambam is like, nothing will be different. Meiri is like, no. There aren't going to be open miracles constantly, but there are going to be changes. It's not... The Bein Hanikvah is not going to fall from heaven,
well,
but...
It depends.
So,
if for example, everyone recognizes that there's one God, right, and they understand that's truth, then even though supernaturally or fundamentally... not fundamentally, but supernaturally there's no like change, but because of the change of knowledge and perception of things, then there obviously will be change in the world.
Good.
But
so
it's very, very natural because of just...
But that's what he's saying, is that the Rambam seems to be more extreme, right? The Rambam... Right. Well, this is Dov Schwartz's contention throughout the chapter, and he says, I'll finish the paragraph. He says the tension between the messianic model and Meiri's writings might have been partly or entirely dispelled had his lost treatise Ketav Hadad, purportedly dealing with the messianic, been available. It is wavering between the two models. However, Meiri can definitely be said to have joined the conceptual messianic framework of his time and place. And he notes that this type of thing is found not just in him, but his argument is that in general, in especially in medieval Provence, among the rationalists, they were primarily, a lot of them, again, Meiri, Dovra Kochavi, Abba Maria Marseille, they were all fundamentally committed to a Maimonidean model where they're not talking open miracles, but they were also much more comfortable talking about certain
societal changes.
Yeah. So, you know, and you know, saying that...
I don't know why that's such a problem, even with the Rambam.
It's not as a problem, but the Rambam doesn't say no one will need to daven for anything because everything will always be good. And all you'll ever need to do is thank God. There'll be nothing to request. Right? That's not... The Meiri...
Because he doesn't say that, doesn't he?
So again, it could be that they said, hey, the Rambam isn't arguing on this, but it feels like in the Rambam, not that way, right? Again, you read the Rambam is like, nothing will change. Right? The only thing that's different is Shibud Malchiyah.
I think taking it so literally is also like a bit...
So again, you could decide to disagree with Schwartz and say no. Maybe the Rambam himself believes this.
He's giving a general overview of like, yeah, nothing will change. But
again, you could dispute it. I'm not saying you couldn't dispute this with I'm not saying you couldn't possibly dispute this from that vantage point, right? If you wanted to say, well, maybe the Rambam would agree, the Meiri might say, well, great. So the Rambam will agree. That makes me happy. You know, at the very least, what I think is important to realize is that, again, there can be in-between positions, right? Meaning, you can have people who will be uncomfortable with the notion that, like, the Beit HaMikdash is going to fall out of heaven. That doesn't mean that they are married to the position that the only, literally, the only difference between nowadays and Yemot HaMashiach is... Yeah, he's king, Shibud Malchiyot. And that's what you see in the Meiri, that the Meiri doesn't think...
Roth Bibi, Melech Yisrael.
Great, thank you.
Is there also a problem of, no, we have to destroy all of the Malik, which we don't know where they are?
Well, that's part of this cheshbon.
That's part of the
Oh.
Now, I will just...
Depends how you want to interpret that.
Well, there's more Malay, not just Nazis.
Sorry. So I will just note that there does seem to be a Syrian Rashi. Sorry, it's actually the Rashi Al Torah, where Rashi Al Torah has the following comment on the pasuk of Mikdash Hashem Kana Yodecha, where he says that. And there he doesn't seem to say that God will build it. He just says like That one's a little bit ambiguous. It's Yirmiyahu, not Yeshayahu. So let me just read you Rashi and Yirmiyahu to know that there might be certain stirot even within Rashi. In Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Aleph, the pasuk said, "Odev Nech Vnei Betulat Yisrael, Od Taadi Tupayech Yatzadim Chol Mischakim." And Rashi says, "What is Od of Nech Vnei? What does it mean? I will build it." Binyanim Shnayim Hayu Lechal Yede Adam Lechach Karvu Odev Nech Ani Batzmi Binyan Shlishi Vnei Leolam Taadi Utikdash Shdi. So in Yirmiyahu, Rashi says, "Who's going to build it? God, right?" In Tehillim, the Rashi says, "Vayiven kmo ramim mikdasho keretz yisadah leolam." Says kmo shamayim vaaretz shenemar b'hem shtei adayim shenemar af yadi yistaretz yunat avcha shamayim. No, is it this one? Okay, you know what? I can't even find it. Which one?
The last one you put in the sheet.
That's a pasuk in. And there's a pasuk in Tehillim.
What does that mean?
I'll leave it aside.
Does it mean if God doesn't build it, they will build it? What's it saying?
We'll come to it. I thought there was a Rashi where he says it, that it might not be this way. Let me read you another Rambam, though, okay, to further emphasize this. The Rambam, let me read you two more Rambams, okay? The Rambam in Hilchot Malachim Perek Yud Bet writes as follows. Al yale al alev shebimot HaMashiach yivatel davar minhago shel olam. Don't even think that in the time of Mashiach a single thing will be different from the way the world looks now. O ye yesham chidush maaseh b'rishit, there will be any new thing in creation. Ela olam kiminhago noheg, the world will function normally. That which it says in Yeshayahu that the wolf will be with the lamb, it's just a mashal. Meaning we'll be in peace with the nations of the world who fight us. In Perek Tet of Hilchot Tshuva, the Rambam writes, the reason that we always look forward to Mashiach is so that we'll be able to rest from the kings, the kingdoms, who don't leave us to learn Torah. And we'll just be calm. We'll get to go to Olam Haba. Because we'll have time to learn and do mitzvot.
Wait, is he saying Olam Haba is just us learning?
No. He's saying that we daven for Mashiach so that we'll be able to do mitzvot here to get Olam Haba.
But we can do it now.
No, but it's better. It's easier. That's all the Rambam says. Mashiach is a good time because it's easier to do mitzvot. That's it. And that's people, there will be wisdom in the world. He'll be smarter than Shlomo. The Navi Gadol, who carved the Moshe Rabbeinu, will be a Navi almost as great as Moshe.
If nothing will change, why would it be easier to do mitzvot?
Because we won't be oppressed by the foreign governments. And
so he is saying something will change.
Well, Ein Bein. Just that. Now you're right. Then he says, and the world will be filled with wisdom and stuff like that. So it could be that the Meiri also agrees with this, right? That thinks that's what the Rama means. Everyone will learn Torah, follow the way of God. The nations will come to the Beit HaMikdash to learn about God. And then he says, furthermore, the days of Mashiach are this world. The world will fundamentally function normally. But there will be Malchut. So again, it could be, right? It could be that the Rambam would agree with the Meiri, right? Maybe that's what the Meiri thinks the Rambam means. If that's true, again, what that would emphasize, even if you don't think the Beit HaMikdash is going to fall from heaven, that doesn't mean that everything is exactly like it is now. You can believe in certain sort of mid-level tweaks. I'm willing to go either way. And this, again, I sent you the Schwartz article. You can read through it if you want. Now, the Rambam himself, by the way, is the one who ties together the fact he doesn't think there's going to be a miracle to the possibility of having more people claim their Mashiach than actually are. Because the Rambam uses his rationalist understanding of Mashiach to explain another almost Mashiach, which is Bar Kochva. Right, and the Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim, Berak Aleph, Al Yal Al Datcha, Shamelach Mashiach Tzarich Latzot Otor Muftim. Don't think that the Mashiach needs to perform miracles, O Mechadish Dvarim Ba'olam, O Mechayim Eitim, and he has to make new things in the world or bring back the dead, Chayotzi B'dvarim Eilu. In the Varkach, it's not true. Shari Rabbi Kiva, Chacham Gadol Mechachamei Mishnahaya, because Rabbi Kiva was the greatest of the Tanoim, and he was the weapon carrier for Bar Kokhba. And he said he was Mashiach. And many other sages thought he was Mashiach. Until he was killed because of his sins. Came in Shnei Arag, and once he was killed, no dilem she'eno, he knew he wasn't Mashiach. And they never asked him for a miracle. Correct.
He's using that as proof to show that.
He's using that as proof that you don't need to perform miracles. Right. You can be in a status of Cheskat Mashiach.
Right.
I see that. Good.
So, does he give a system to how to disprove someone that's just a Mashiach?
He dies. Before? He dies.
That is the only.
Or he fails to build the Beit HaMikdash.
Well, you only fail once you die. So.
Correct. Or he stops inspiring people, starts losing wars, or whatever. Right. Meaning, there's certain things naturalistic. No, presumably it's a trajectory. Right? Meaning it's somewhat naturalist for him. But he's saying if he's, you know, inspiring the Jewish people and he's a tzaddik and he's winning wars, so then he's Bechezkat Mashiach.
But winning wars is like that's a very natural thing. So why?
Correct.
Even if he's bringing the Mashiach, I mean, he just practically, like, to bring the Mashiach, you have to win wars. So that's what he's saying.
He's saying if you're that person, you're Bechezkat Mashiach, you can say, though, that guy could turn out to be Mashiach.
It's not because he's Mashiach, but because. To
Mashiach
build
is going to be
something or take over the country. You need to win wars. Like it's just like
yeah, and Mashiach is going to be a natural king, and that's part of being a king. And therefore, if someone is being very successful at it, you're allowed to look at him and say, "Oh, Bechez got Mashiach. He could be Mashiach."
So what if we like democratically vote and institute a king?
Good. So the question of whether we actually need a king, the Rambam does seem to think we need a king, but like Rav Kook, as I already said, doesn't.
Didn't really have like an idea of democracy.
100%. And Rav Kook thinks that no, you can accomplish the same thing as a king with through democracy, and then the power devolves onto the Am.
All right. So all we got to do is make BB religious. That's what you're saying.
Great. Okay. So this is. So Daniel, it's for this reason that I thought it might take us 2 days because I do think that the Ha'arot, both of Dr. Berger and of Professor Schwartz, are helpful in terms of filling out how this is not just a local machlokas. It needs to be understood in the broader context, right? The Beit HaMikdash falling out of heaven, right, is not just a standalone where it's machlokas Rashi Meiri, but it's part of a broader perspective. What we're going to see, I guess, then on Sunday is there are in the Achronim, there are some the Achronim, some of them want to bridge this a bit and say, you know, there are different possibilities. That it's not definitely going to fall out of heaven, and it's not definitely not going to fall out of heaven. We already saw, if you remember, the possibility that maybe most of it fall out of heaven, but human beings will still do the Makabe Patish. Right? Remember
that's
that?
Just as, it doesn't change anything.
Correct, but we're going to see some other perspectives on Sunday. I think if we ran through it now, we wouldn't do it justice. Even though, I don't know if there's really an hour worth of material, but we'll see. There might be, because I'm going to show you some of the more of the stuff from Dr. Canafocal's article also, which, if you get a chance to read, that'll be great. But some people say it depends. It depends on whether you, Mashiach comes because it's just time or because you're Zoche. So we're going to see that there are middle positions that appear in the Achronim, and that's what we're going to. So that's what we're going to deal with on Sunday. So then I guess you guys. So.